Welcome to Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. This week, we are diving into the story of how the Trump administration's immigration policy includes prosecuting volunteers offering humanitarian assistance to migrants. Federal prosecutors charged Scott Warren with harboring two undocumented migrants and conspiracy. The charges set off a national debate about the sanctuary movement and galvanized the faith community across the country. On June 11, 2019, after hours of deliberation, the jury was deadlocked on all three charges. The presiding judge declared a mistrial. Later in the summer, federal prosecutors announced plans to retry Warren, this time dropping the conspiracy charges. Producer Jude Joffe Block picks up the story here at a rally in Manhattan outside the federal courthouse in November 2019.
Amen.
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 When Scott's second felony trial is underway in Tucson in November, people all over the country are paying attention. In Manhattan, supporters rally for him.
Thank you so much to all of you who came out on this cold, 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 windy day.
About 30 people bundled up in hats and scarves gather in a little park downtown, across the street from New York City's immigration court. One man, in a black jacket, stands alone in the crowd.
Can I chat with you? I'm a radio reporter, and I'm working
He responds in Spanish.
Yo soy originario de Honduras, de Centroamérica.
His name is Pablo Suazo. He tells me he's an asylum seeker from Honduras, who now lives in New York and makes music. In 2012, he and his two brothers walked through the Arizona desert to make it into the United States. They got lost and dehydrated. Then they found water. Water volunteers had left, gallon jugs with kind notes. Finding water was like a blessing from God, he says, or magic. It was incredible. Pablo thinks that water is why he's alive today. Even so, his brothers died on the journey. Pablo says humanitarian aid volunteers helped recover one brother's remains. Pablo chokes up. He says he's grateful, and that's why he's demonstrating his support for Scott Warren.
Porque no descansaremos hasta que nuestro compañero esté libre.
We won't rest, he says, until our compañero is free. That afternoon in Tucson, Scott's second trial ends and goes to the jury.
Well, it was a quick deliberation. It was maybe 2 hours, so.
Scott and his team rush back to the courthouse to find out the verdict. Emily frantically edits his public statement as they walk.
The jury hands over the piece of paper, and the judge looks at it and then reads it. And he says, not guilty on both counts. And then they went through and asked each jury member what their actual verdict was. And, you know, then the judge was off to do something else.
To Scott, it didn't really feel like a celebration. Emily says it was more of an absence of a prosecution. But it was a victory.
You know, our basic values, like, stand, like, 12 people, 12 jurors saw the truth. And it's relieving. I think it's empowering for people. And, yeah, it's exciting.
The same day, the judge issued his ruling in the earlier misdemeanor case.
And he acquitted me on the abandonment of property charge, saying that our religious freedom Restoration Act defense was valid.
It was the first time a federal judge had approved religious freedom as a defense for a crime related to border humanitarian aid. Then a different judge, also relying on religious freedom, reversed the convictions of four other No More Deaths volunteers.
That was pretty exciting.
In the end, Scott beat all the charges against him.
There's now some legal precedent that protects people that live in the borderlands who choose to provide humanitarian aid in the way that Scott did, and to do that like with less fear of criminal prosecution. And it clarifies some of the confusion that people had.
Yet the U.S. attorney for Arizona, Michael Bailey, vows to keep prosecuting what he calls open border groups if they help migrants evade the border patrol. He explained his position in an interview on public radio station KJZZ.
When you're falsely calling what is essentially harboring humanitarian aid, then it falls under the harboring statute and it's fair game for prosecution. And when we confront that, we absolutely have a responsibility to prosecute it.
In the first half of 2020, Scott recovered the remains of five more migrants in the desert. It's now impossible for many immigrants to enter the country legally due to federal policies that took effect after the COVID-19 pandemic hit. Asylum seekers are turned away. President Donald Trump's 30-foot-tall border wall is going up just south of Ajo. Bulldozers are destroying saguaro cactuses and sacred native sites.
There's despair, but that's been what the border's been about for a long time. That resistance, I think, just continues.
Last spring, Emily and Scott decided to separate, but they remain close and committed to desert humanitarian aid. They know for some people desperate to get into this country right now, the Arizona desert is one of the only paths available. And they say they'll keep trying to make that desert crossing less deadly. For Interfaith Voices, I'm Jude Joffe Block.
I caught up with Jude Joffe Block to get some additional background on what's happening in Ajo and to hear how Scott Warren's acquittal has impacted volunteer efforts to help migrants. Jude, thank you for joining me. What drew you to tell this story?
Well, I've been covering immigration and border issues for most of my career, and it's such a polarized issue right now. And this story about prosecutions of border volunteers, and Scott Warren's case in particular, really crystallizes, I think, some of the fundamental parts of that debate and sort of our country's choice about how to see this issue and what to do about it. I'm also really interested in questions about how we draw the lines in society about what's right, what's wrong, what's moral, what's immoral, what's legal, what's illegal. And when there's clashes between what the law says and what someone's religion or moral compass says, I think those questions of what happens next are really interesting.
You introduced listeners to a snapshot of the history on the government's crackdown of the sanctuary movement from the 1980s. Why was that important to this story?
There are direct threads from the sanctuary movement of the 1980s to the prosecutions and the response here in Arizona around the prosecution of No More Deaths volunteers and Scott Warren's case. Some of the founders of the sanctuary movement were present supporting Scott Warren at the trial. So Reverend John Fife, who was a founder of the sanctuary movement at Southside Presbyterian Church in Tucson, he himself was prosecuted by law enforcement for smuggling as part of his effort to help asylum seekers fleeing civil wars in Guatemala and El Salvador in the 1980s. And a lot of people in southern Arizona who had lived through the sanctuary movement, had lived through the government's crackdown on the sanctuary movement, saw this recent round of prosecutions in the last couple of years as kind of a coda 30 years later to the same story. And in fact, John Fife went on to be a co-founder of No More Deaths. And both Ajo Samaritans and No More Deaths, which are the groups that Emily Saunders and Scott Warren volunteer with, you know, they're both faith-based organizations. No More Deaths is a ministry of the Unitarian Universalist Church. And so there are direct ties between this historic fight between religion and law around immigration and the more recent crackdowns and response here in Arizona.
I know you've been in touch with Scott and Emily. Since the trial, things have really changed on the border. How has the pandemic influenced the efforts of volunteers?
Both Scott and Emily have said that they are going to continue doing this work. They are continuing to do this work. And what's interesting is that the pandemic has made, in some ways, has made border volunteers see their mission as all the more critical. At the same time, it's complicated. I mean, it used to be that border volunteers would ride in trucks together to remote places, and there'd be volunteer programs that would bring big groups of people together to do intense, like, internships for a period of time or field training. The pandemic has complicated all of that, of course, and there have to be new considerations that if people are leaving water, that it's, you know, a safe thing to do, that it's sanitized, that they're not spreading any germs. So there are all these new questions that the pandemic has raised. And yet at the same time, because the border is now closed in many respects, and asylum seekers are being turned away, and many kinds of immigrants can't be let in legally, you know, the desert is one of the only options open for people who are desperate to get into the United States. And so people are still crossing and people are still dying. And I've heard from people on the ground, some of the activists involved, who really see the legal precedent that was set in these recent legal cases as being a double-edged sword. So on the one hand, there's more protection potentially for people who do border volunteer work, that this religious freedom defense is something that might protect them in the future from prosecution or from a conviction. But it, at the same time, there were all these headlines about the fact that Scott Warren was facing 20 years in prison. There is a chilling effect of people being concerned about violating the law. And so it is an interesting moment in that in some ways the border activists won in court, but in the public perception, there was so much publicity about the crackdown that for regular folks who are following this issue, it feels like the issue is in their mind, helping somebody by giving water or food could be an illegal act.
Jude, most of us will not encounter a migrant lost in the desert in need of food and water. And that has to have an impact on a community. You were in Ajo. How are the people that you met, how are they affected by their proximity to the desert and to the federal policies that discourage humanitarian aid?
So Ajo is very close to the border with Mexico, and it's surrounded by desert and a lot of federal land, in fact. And back in 1980, there was an event where a large group of Salvadorans who were fleeing El Salvador had gotten lost crossing the desert, and people in town found out about this. It was more than 20 people who were lost, migrants who were lost. And the community really unified in the mission of trying to help find these lost migrants. And there are people today in Ajo who still remember that episode, and people who've continued that tradition because it's close enough to the border that people do encounter border crossers from time to time who ask for food and water. And while Scott's case was ongoing, I was down in Ajo and I talked with people who were unsure about what they could do legally if they encountered a migrant, even though for years they had had a routine of giving water or food when they were asked. And there are also people in town who are very skeptical of humanitarian aid and question it. And it's also a hub for Border Patrol agents. A lot of Border Patrol agents live in town. And when you walk around town, it's common to see signs that say humanitarian aid is never a crime on one home. And then next door or across the street, a flag for President Trump. And so it's like the rest of the country, a community that's polarized on this issue, you know, right on the front lines of it. And we as a country, I think, are grappling with where we stand and where we land on these issues.
That was reporter Jude Joffe Block. Scott Warren's defense lawyer successfully argued that the 1993 Religious Freedom Restoration Act applies to Scott because his actions were motivated by deeply held beliefs, and the jury agreed. But what does that mean exactly for volunteers like Scott and for other activists motivated by faith. Coming up, my conversation with Catherine Franke, a legal scholar and the director of the Law, Rights, and Religion Project at Columbia Law School. She talks about what it means and how the decision can have implications for both conservative and liberal activists seeking religious exemptions from complying with the law. This is Inspired, a production of Interfaith Voices. Stay with us.